Hello, good people, and welcome to this week's broadcast of The Alchemy of Light. I am Jamil Graham, your host, very pleased to be welcoming you on this beautiful day, the 14th day in the sixth lunation and the first year of healing and gratitude. And in the Gregorian calendar, it is the 2nd of June, 2012. And the Alchemy of Light broadcast is a celebration and exploration of consciousness, how we feel and think, because everything begins with a feeling. And today we have a unique guest. His name is Monty Farber, but he's really half of a whole. His partner of many years, Amy Zerner, is an avid influence and inspiration in his life. The two of them have made a great deal of creative accomplishments in the psychic exploration world, having accomplished the publication of 40 plus books in 14 languages, I believe. And so today we have Monty Farber here to speak with us about his new publication, Quantum Affirmations, and a technique he's developed, and just however spirit moves us. So welcome, Monty.
Thank you, Jamil. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thanks.
And I loved listening to your introduction. I loved the calendar introduction. That was great.
Thanks. I really feeling very excited about that. I mean, you're also an astrologer. And Amy are also astrologers. So in the world of astrology, speaking of a calendar, you know full well that calendars, the Gregorian calendar or the Arabic calendar, whatever calendar, they're all just made up, right?
That's for sure. And so when people talk about, you know, New Year's, I always think New Year's is when the first day of Aries. But I also know that even further back, it used to be the first day of Taurus. So it's all made up. You're absolutely right.
Yes, I feel very passionate about this year and reclaiming our voice and reclaiming our power and reclaiming our destiny as a human species worthy of all things beautiful and grace that is in each one of us. And without that self-connection, without knowing that we're part of a divine universe, I feel like we're kind of operating with half of our awareness. And the reason I guess I'm going there is because in your work, I noticed there's a consistency in the theme of helping people connect with their psychic, their intuitive, their higher mind, or whatever you call it. All of your books are based on astrology, tarot, goddesses. You offer many different tools and techniques and games and, you know, try to make it fun and interesting. And I really respect that mission because you've been at it since 1975. Is that correct? Your first publication was in 1995.
I met Amy in 1975, so that's when we moved in together. So that's sort of when my life started. And my first publication, which was called Karma Cards, which was put out by Penguin Books, was in 1988, which was the year that Nancy Reagan admitted or was discovered to have used astrology. So that was good for that book. That we sold a lot of copies because of that, because it was all Karma Cards was all about astrology. It's still in print since 1988.
Interesting.
Yeah, so, and what you said about everything starting with a feeling is so important, and that's really what I'm trying to get to people with our books. Because I once asked Amy, "What's the common denominator of all human caused suffering?" I was feeling a little odd at the time, and she, being a genius, said poor decision making. So we like to help people make better decisions, because this could be that world that you're describing if people weren't confused and escaping into drugs and drinking and acting out behavior. It could be that beautiful, wonderful world that Amy and I have forged, and what you're doing, what we're doing, it's all part of the work to bring peace and harmony to people.
Absolutely. And we'll continue. Share with us more about how your work has evolved and a little bit of the story, the background of you and Amy, and where you first found this passion to pursue.
Well, we met at the filming of a porno movie. I was playing bass in a band that had been hired I was playing bass in a group that had been hired to play in this clean scene. Everyone had their clothes on of a rooftop party scene in New York City. And Amy was a friend of my girlfriend at the time who was sick of me. And she brought Amy to see if she was interested. And we got together that way. And when I met Amy, and this was actually 1974, before we moved in together, she was studying astrology. And since I was studying Amy, I learned astrology and the tarot. And I used to think it was nonsense, so I don't blame people for thinking it was nonsense. I remember the days when I did, too. That's how I started.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I know. But I've come a ways since then. things have gotten very exciting, and I worked in the film business, and then I would do readings for people on the set, and they would say, oh, we wish there was a way that you could... We wish you had you around and at parties in the Hamptons where I live, and I invented Karma Cards, which was an astrology card game that helps you tell your future, and you sort of learn astrology at the same time, and it did very well. So I've taken it since from there, and we did tarot projects. We do all kinds of things as we evolve. We do projects that are the best thing we're capable of producing at the time. That's what quantum affirmations is. It's the flowering of everything I know.
Hmm. Tell us more about quantum affirmations and go as far as you'd like in sharing with us your technique and how come this is the flowering. How did it make that title?
Well, quantum affirmations came from me trying to figure out why I have this wonderful life. I had a very rough childhood. I mean, not as rough as many. But, you know, mentally ill mother and in and out of mental institutions and an emotionally distant father and all this kind of crazy stuff, you know, but certainly not as bad as some people. But I have this wonderful life, and I tried to think, is there a technique that I'm using that's not metaphysical, that's not about astrology, that's not about tarot or all the other things? I mean, I have a highly developed sense of intuition. I can do psychic readings, which I do as a profession, but I wanted to do something, once again, that would help people who are not interested in you know, and it is metaphysical, because the word metaphysical means beyond the physical, and it's exactly what you said. It's everything starts with a feeling, everything starts with an idea, and as a sort of pseudoscience scientist, I've always tried to look for a scientific basis. I know a lot about quantum physics, and the book started off having a lot about the relationship between quantum physics and thought, because quantum physics deals with particles, the smallest particles of matter, and it also deals with light, which is both a particle and a wave. And I thought to myself, well, thought is energy, so perhaps quantum physics applies. And then I realized the relationship between affirmations, which is something I've done 5 books about, to quantum physics. And I ended up taking 90% of the physics stuff out of the book because I want to make it for people so that it's fun. Because if it's not fun, no one's going to do it. So I came up with this technique that I've done my whole life without realizing it, like a fish in water. It's something I evolved to help deal with the difficult times. And what it comes down to basically is affirming and visualizing, but affirming and visualizing including the negative blowback that's going to come with any positive. In other words, if you're going to have a relationship, if you're going to want your soulmate, you're going to have to see as part of that the worry that comes with, what if I lose the soulmate? What if the soulmate passes on? What if they get sick? You know, that kind of stuff. Trying to make things as real as possible, and then realizing that, oh my God, this really does relate to quantum physics. And I can tell you more about that if you're interested, but I don't want to bore everybody with quantum physics.
Well, it certainly doesn't bore me. And I find that the whole definition of science itself is hitting the ultimate wall of its own self-identity. I call it material-based science, this idea that for anything to measure as real needs to have a material, replicable structure, as basically not true. It's really worn itself out because as we find in our own human process, there's nothing that is solid to begin with.
Yep.
Right? Okay.
Oh, you're that's absolutely right.
That's quantum physics. So in our potentially higher evolved, multidimensionally activated human state, we don't necessarily even see the solid, right? So that is science. And so we have a new definition of science that I believe is really just going to honor the full integrity of what a multidimensional reality is, which we all are multidimensional reality. So we got a couple of things going on here. We have the idea that we have this better world that we can create, and many of us are here to create it and nothing else. All right. And then there's a phase we're in where we're realizing where we've been and that we've been deceived. We really have, we've had a unique path on this planet, I would say, that the human itself has chosen a very interesting way to grow itself.
We live in interesting times. You know, they say that that's the Chinese curse. May you live in interesting times. Yeah, the quantum physics, the quantum physicists, I mean, that was a brilliant explanation, by the way, that you just did. It's really great. The quantum physicists sound more like shamans than we do.
Mm.
And they're a little embarrassed about it, but they have to go with what's real. And what you said about when we see things, we're not really seeing them. I mean, when you, I think it was Niels Bohr who said, if you don't think quantum physics sounds crazy, you don't understand it. Oh, I'm paraphrasing him.
Mm-hmm.
Because when it gets down to the smallest particles, there's the famous, everyone knows that, oh yeah, light is a particle and light is a wave. Well, it's the way it's done is this physicist experiment where there's a slit screen and the light goes through it, and sometimes it's a wave and sometimes it's a particle. But what they don't say, I mean, they say it, but they don't talk about the implications, is it's affected if you're looking at it. In other words, matter is affected by consciousness. It's a particle or a wave, depending on whether if the tree falls in the forest and there's no one there to hear it, it falls differently. So if consciousness affects matter, and then you go to the other aspects of quantum physics, which is that there are probable realities implied in this present moment, and then there's a future that you want to reach, because quantum affirmations is all about reaching the future that you want, where you have a better job or you have a better romance or your bills are paid, things like that. If you want to reach that future, how do you do it? So that's one of the probable futures. How do you get there? How do you plant your flag in the undiscovered territory? And one of the reasons that you'll get there is if you visualize the good and the bad of where you're going, so that you know you can handle it, and then your subconscious mind will lead you there because it's very powerful. But it won't lead you there if you're not ready to handle it.
Mm.
So that's part of the blending of metaphysical and quantum physics. It's talking about probable futures, and then there's something called entanglement. There's all kinds of crazy quantum physics terms that happen to apply in the shamanic universe.
They absolutely do. And any scientist, true scientist that I've ever known, any work that I've studied, they all come to the God question, you know, the quote, God question, because the roads lead to the same place.
Yep.
the mystery of it all.
Yep.
Please explain to us a little bit about entanglement and how in your process, I think this process is very well organized. It's very direct to identify the goal, then to examine the history of the goal and why you want what you want, and then to identify your gifts, and then to entangle those, your gifts and your goal, and then play with it in your mind, really build that out that you call quantumplation. That's a very, very succinct, very clean way to say it. And so, well, please explain to us a little bit about how entanglement happens now, and then how this what I would call integration of positive and negative scenario is matters, and how that works in the entanglement of your goal and your gift.
Sure. Well, the way things work in particle physics or in quantum mechanics, is everything gets reduced to its smallest, cleanest possible level before they can make experiments. And when you're trying to change your experience of reality, you have to get down to the very basics. And so the first thing is, what do you want? When I do psychic readings for people, I will ask them, I'll say, what do you want to know? And you would be surprised how many people don't know what they want to know. They'll say, well, read me. I say, I don't work that way. I want to know what you want to know. So what is your question? Some people will say, I want to meet my soulmate, but unfortunately that's not true. What they really are trying to say is, my life is going pretty good. I don't want someone coming in to mess it up. How do I not feel bad about being lonely? And so that's a lot easier to deal with than finding your soulmate. And that's just one example. You know, and for every crazy reason that we have that we've prevented ourselves, because I give everybody a lot of power, I say, you've brought yourself to where you are, you can bring yourself to where you want to be. So that's why you look at your history with it. What craziness that makes sense to some part of your personality has prevented you from getting there? And then you look at your gift, which is something that flows to you effortlessly and endlessly, and everyone has it, whether it's being kind, whether you're a good parent, whether you're really good with your pets, if you're a cook, whatever it is, everyone has something that they don't even think about. They're just good at it. That's the feeling you want to entangle with your goal, because the goal is something you don't feel comfortable about. It's something you don't have, and the reason you don't have it is there's something about it that you're afraid of, whether it's going to change your life or whether you're afraid you won't be able to handle a soulmate or you have a history of, you know, things don't work, whatever. There's always a reason. So then you want to entangle your gift, which is the thing that flows effortlessly and endlessly, with your goal, which is the thing that you have not been able to attain so far, but you will. And in quantum physics, entanglement happens when two particles interact. And when they interact, and let's say they're both spinning counterclockwise, you take them to different ends of the universe. And this has been proven mathematically. People like Einstein were the first quantum physicists. They proved this. They didn't like it. Einstein especially spent the rest of his career trying to disprove it because he didn't like it. He called it spooky interaction at a distance. You turn one way, the other one on the other side of the universe will turn that same exact way because they're quantum entangled. So you entangle your gift, what flows effortlessly and endlessly, with your goal, the thing that hasn't exactly flowed. And so that you, every time you're cooking or when you think about you want your goal or you're doing your gift, you see your goal coming out of it. If it's money, you see cooking and money. You know, you do these little visualizations in your head because, as you said at the beginning, everything starts with a feeling. Everything starts with an idea. And so then, once you've gotten a little more comfortable with your gift and your goal, then you start having fun with it. Then you can do the visualizations where you see what I call the negative, but everyone tells me, don't say negative, that's a bad word. And I say, well, if you're going to win the lottery, and I'm not saying people should use quantum affirmations to try and win the lottery, but if, as an example, if you're going to win the lottery, you're going to have to expect your relatives and strangers to come out of the woodwork and ask you for money. That's just part of the way it works. So those are the five steps, and you're trying to entangle yourself with the future that you want to get to. So you have to calm yourself down, examine your goal, why you haven't got there, and then try and blend it with a feeling of ease and comfort. And going in, then once you're there, you can go into a future visualization of this future and see that when you meet your soulmate, you might not like their parents, or their parents might not like you, but you can handle it.
Very practical application.
Yeah, definitely.
And the feeling, I appreciate your going back to that a lot too, because in the feeling stage, do you, in your books, offer suggestions or things for how people might quiet themselves? Because I find that there's a lot of challenge in that. Even, you know, I mean, I'm here in Boston, which, you know, you're on the East Coast too. They're all on speed here, you know, and they're too busy to feel. You know what I mean? And ultimately, you do have to stop, right? You do have to make that commitment to sit down and be with yourself. And so in your books and things, do you, is there a process you offer or a recommendation of how one might pursue that? I mean, nobody can give anybody that commitment that is required on the individual level.
That's why I try to make it fun, because, and I also try and address it to the goal-oriented people, because quantum affirmations is for changing your life. And to give you a kind of crazy example, when we did it for once, we did a special edition for One Spirit Book Club, and we did a 2.5-hour DVD with it that comes with it. And everyone who worked on it, I had four people who had come for weight loss, they came for love, they came for money and career, and everyone who worked on it, including the camera people and the editors, everyone lost weight. Because the thing with quantum affirmations is once you calm yourself down, and believe it or not, the very process of drilling down to what do you want is very calming. And I like to think that I write in a friendly style. And I'm very, I mean, people don't forgive themselves, but I'm trying to get people to forgive themselves, because if a friend of yours or a stranger came to most people and said, you know, this is my problem, you'd be a lot kinder to them than you are to yourself. You know, so many people are so mean to themselves. You know, they regret something, they this, that. And you would tell that person, oh, don't let it get you, just keep going. So I'm trying to get people to be their own best friends, and that's one of the reasons everyone all lost weight, because you can't lie to yourself when you do quantum affirmations, because you're more friendly with yourself. So one of the things I've been fascinated with lately is how the people out, not necessarily in Boston, but out in Silicon Valley, are getting spiritual, because they've made the money, and the next thing is quality of life. So we went to a concert. My wife and I went to, not concert, excuse me, shows you how I think. We went to a conference called Wisdom 2.0. And it was the founder of Google and the founder of Twitter and the founder of eBay and the founder, you know, all these things. And they're talking about mindfulness. So they're dipping their toe in the world of spirituality because they know they can buy 1,000 cars. But what does that do for you? You can only put on one pair of pants a day. You can only drive one car at a time. Yeah, they're starting to realize there's more to life and that you have to give back. So I'm very hopeful. And even in Boston or in New York and the Hamptons, where people are so proud of the fact that they're not spiritual, I think they are. I think they're starting to change.
I absolutely agree. And well, I see this well in our youth. I find that our 20-somethings and 30s as well, but in there's this particular block in their 20s that I've encountered consistently here. And just last night I had this amazing spontaneous celebration, and they're very, very practical.
Yeah.
Okay. These people, you know, I feel like when I get talking to them, this is the example. I went into their house last night. Okay, this is a group of 20-somethings, bluegrass musicians, serious musicians. You don't play bluegrass if you can't play music. Anybody who knows that, right? And these were really good musicians, and they're 20-somethings. So in their house, I was leaving, and on the front door, it was a big post, really cool little big poster. It said, "Unhurry." And isn't
love
that
it.
Cool? And they didn't just put it there for fun. That was intentionally put there to remind them. There are four of them, or three of them in the house, to remind them before they go out into the world to bring a peaceful vibe.
Exactly. And well, because they know. I think the information overload requires us to somehow either deal with it or be destroyed by it. You know, I'm working on my new book that I'm working on now, which won't be out for a while because I have to sell it first, but it's called The Tao of Brooklyn. And it's all about, you know, I grew up in Brooklyn, speaking of the East Coast, and people were very, of course, proud of the fact that they weren't spiritual or whatever. But you have to be strong to deal with today. I think that the young people today have to be the strongest people in the history of the world to deal with the information overload. They're confronted with more information in a year than most people were confronted in their life, and information that really affects you, not just, you know, Farmer Brown has a great crop this year. I mean, when you compare what the young people today have to go through compared to what even we had to go through in the 60s, because I lived through that, it's 100 times more fraught with danger in the sense of frying your brain. So Unhurry should be a poster on everybody's door.
That's what I was saying. I said, oh my God, we should put this on the trains. Let's pull our cash together and just put them all over the trains. Why not? Put them on the poles on the way down the hill. Yes.
Yeah, no, it's really important. I mean, I feel like I'm part of this movement. I'm not necessarily Unhurry movement, though I love that. That's really cool. But I'm part of this movement that's trying to make people strong enough to deal with the present moment and the future that's coming. Because one of the, you know, in the tarot, and I see everything as a whole, I just think that everybody should know astrology and the tarot because it's just a great way to think about life, whether you believe in it or not. Mm. There's a position in the Celtic cross, or you're from Boston, so it's the Celtic cross.
Thank you so much.
I know, everyone's like, oh, it's the Celtic cross. No, not Boston. There's a position, the third from the last position is actually next to the last position. It's called the Hope and the Fear. And I always used to wonder, why do they call it that? And one day I realized, what you hope for, you must be afraid of. Because if you weren't afraid of it, you'd have it already. So fear is the destroyer. That is what keeps us. You know, if you want to talk to the people that are only interested in money or the better job, why don't you have it? Because you're afraid of something. You know, you haven't taken the risk. You haven't talked to the right person. You haven't done what you know you have to do. And unfortunately, every crazy thing that we all do makes sense to some weird part of ourselves. So there's always an excuse. But if you really want to change your life, you can do it. And that's what quantum affirmations is all about. If you don't want to lie to yourself anymore, if you do, you know, read somebody else's book.
I can appreciate that very much, very much. Well, and part of handing people tools is, you know, just the unconditional love piece. And talk a little bit about fear, if you will, because our culture is over-feared and over-sexed and fear goes with manipulation and control and all, you know, I mean, we are bombarded with that. Even if you don't watch television, you know, it's the energy current that's so strong in the lower vibration. And I'm sure that that has a lot to do with what disables people from being able to take that risk when that, you know, there's a moment that you sometimes feel like you can just spread your wings, but oh, the density of that fear is so heavy. And so the people who are just right on the edge have a harder time lifting out with that. So please talk a bit about fear and how you see it.
Sure. Well, the first thing to know is that fear short circuits your nervous system. But yet it has an appropriate application. Fear is the part of us that keeps the dinosaur from stepping on us. And fear is the part of us that said, you know, last time you did that, you really screwed up, so don't do it again. There's an appropriate amount of fear. You know, in the Bible, it says to everything there is a season in Ecclesiastes. There's a time to be afraid, but not all the time. And unfortunately, what you said is so true about the oversexed, overstimulated. How many murders does an average person see who watches television? You know, they see one, two, three, four a day. And that makes you, you know, your subconscious at a certain point says that could happen to you. So then there's people worried about that. And then there are people to be afraid of course. And so if you read the news, what rises to the top is not the cream. It's actually the scream rises to the top. So if it bleeds, it leads. So you see all this horror. And so people are overstimulated. And of course the whole sex thing is just out of control. And so that's why I don't want to think that people are going to become gurus or people are going to become meditators, but I'm just trying to calm down people, even if it's only a little bit in the morning for 10 minutes and 10 minutes before you go to sleep at night, because that's how you do quantum affirmations, and to do a visualization that makes you feel in control. Because one of the things about fear, the main thing, is you're out of control. You know, there's three reactions to fear. There's flight, there's fright, of course, and then there's also frozen. You get frozen. So you either want to fight, you want to run, or you just stand there like a deer in the headlights. So, and when that happens, I mean, I'm so glad you got me talking about this, because when this happens, you release all kinds of chemicals into your body. That's like hooking yourself up to a poison drip.
Mm.
And that's one of the reasons that cancer and diseases like that are endemic now, because, of course, we all have cancer cells going through us all the time, but it lowers your resistance. If you're afraid all the time, you know, at some point your body says, you know, we don't really live in a great place. Maybe it's time to check out.
Mm.
But so you have to take positive steps to not be afraid. So I, of course, it's good to be a martial artist, because that's good for your self-discipline and all kinds of stuff. But calming yourself down and realizing this is an appropriate fear, this is an inappropriate fear, and seeing the difference, and being aware of your reactions to stuff, being mindful like they're doing out in Silicon Valley, that's a good start. You know, to get well, you got to know you're sick. So.
Mm. Hmm. Thank you very much for that. And from that, there's a couple of places. Now, the conversation of consciousness linking with the quantum application that you've offered to us in such a simple way, can you share with us, does it make sense to you, how one who feeds their mind with the consistency of violence and such on mainstream media, I mean, even turning on the internet, you have to, you know, any news channel, the same rules apply, right? If it bleeds,
yeah.
It leads. I love that. Those are great. Those are all really right on the mark there. So can you share with us a little how you can see the consciousness? That is our consciousness. We are engaging our consciousness in absorbing this reality of death and destruction and desensitizing ourselves to what that actually is.
Yeah.
And that then creates our reality that has some measure of this unrest and this measure of violence, and maybe not outward, but to ourselves, which really hits to something else that you said that I think is really, really important, is self-love. Maybe we're not going out and hitting people, but maybe we're not nice to our partner, or maybe we're horrible. I mean, we are horrible to ourselves, you know.
Yeah.
So can you share with us in your quantum theory there how we might relate that from what people just assume as normal to how that manifests already?
Well, I think when you start thinking to yourself of why you haven't gotten stuff, that's the beginning of it. But one of the things with affirmations is the reason I write books about affirmations is not because no one knows how to do it. It's because people are too good at doing it, except the affirmations that most people do is, I can't do that. I don't have enough money, whatever, power, or I can't do that. I'm too fat, or I look this way, or if I only had this car, this would be wonderful. So everybody has this stream of consciousness, and there's so much garbage in it. The very process of just examining your consciousness a little bit, and feel, you know, one thing that I've always it brings me up short, because I'm really not perfect, and I know a lot, but that doesn't mean I do it all the time. But one of the things that brings me up short is when someone says, "I can't change." Because there's people walking around out there thinking they can't change, so why should they bother to look at their thoughts? And to me, that's like saying, you know, I'm suicidal. Because why not make your life better, just from a selfish point of view? Why not have more fun? Why not be why not live a longer time and be well? Because I don't think people realize the somatic connection between your thoughts and your body. Because people get sick when they're upset. And if you don't make friends with yourself, if you'll watch television, if every once in a while I'll say to myself, you know, I'm sorry, consciousness for subjecting you to the movie. I just want, you know, the way people will write on comments on some of the websites, they'll say, I want my 5 minutes back that I just spent reading this article. I apologize to myself and say, oh, God, that was awful. And you just, it's all about being aware. Awareness is the antidote for so many things. And making friends with yourself is the antidote for so many things, because that's all part of your immune system. You know, what is your immune system? You're not, your immune system is not something that prevents white blood cells from getting in or whatever. It's something that fights them when they do. So you have, being friends with yourself is sort of like part of your immune system, and being conscious. And when you feel like punching someone, or if you feel like reacting and saying a nasty thing, and just being aware of it, what, you know, there was a philosopher, Gurdjieff, he said, when falling asleep wakes you up, you know you're making progress. So when you're aware of you're just about to, you know, open your mouth and put your foot in it, and you stop, that's really important. Or when you stop getting mad in traffic, you know, when someone cuts you off or something. So it's all about awareness. It's all about mindfulness. And that's sort of a way to put the brake on the poison coursing through your body.
Oh, very well said. I appreciate that very much. The connection isn't that far. It's just that we need to relearn, perhaps, our approach to it and the value of our minds, the value of what's going on inside of ourselves, and our minds more than a head. The minds really, I believe, start in the heart.
Yes. And many cultures see it that way. And look how when you point to yourself, you always point to your heart. You don't point to your head. You say me, and you point to your heart. It's very interesting.
I find it fascinating, too. And I'm waiting for the, you know, they talk all these about brain connections, but there's a whole other part. What creates the desire? This new science breakthrough recently was the science community basically simulated telepathy with a woman who had, you might have came across it, somebody told it to me secondhand, so I'm paraphrasing really roughly here, but I understand clearly what they're talking about. A woman with no arms was able to pick up a cup by the power of her mind. But what stimulated her passion or her desire or her need to have that cup? And now that's the connection from the heart, no?
Yes, of course. And that's why I was literally floored, and I had to get myself going again when you did your introduction. I know I've said it a few times. I'm not just saying that. It really floored me, because the way you did your introduction, I thought to myself, wow, she knows. she doesn't need to hear about quantum affirmations, because that's the truth. It all does start there. And when you see all the pain and suffering in the world, and everyone's going to pass away. There's no way around it. But when you see, while we're here, we might as well make the best of it. When you see all the suffering and you want to do something to help people, and you know it's not that it's simple, but it's not that hard. It's a lot easier than so many things people do. And you see people just escaping into drugs and alcohol, because that's what it is. They're escaping. They're trying to get away from pain, and you can understand it. But at the same time, there's other ways to do it. Why not get addicted to something that works well for you instead of something that destroys your life? And I'm going to be thinking about Unhurry all day.
Actually, I think I never grow tired of studying this stuff, specifically for what you're talking about. You know, the building the stamina, I feel like the heart is a muscle. To love is a muscle that we must exercise, and to exercise it and to it fully really become present, it doesn't happen in a minute, you know. So I must review often. I must continue every time I'll read something like your book or listen to. It doesn't matter how many times I've heard any of it before, because there's always a new message. I really feel that everything is a message, a potential teacher, you know, and that's why I'm definitely a student in the University of Life. I don't get classrooms, right? I know that this moment is teaching me something from not just what our talk is about, but from our friends on high, you know, and there's a lot to that. Well, let's go somewhere with astrology, because sure. I'm very interested in your astrological background as well. And we are in this exact moment, I'm sure you're well aware, of a phenomenal period astrologically. We are in the eclipse era. We had that phenomenal solar eclipse and a lunar eclipse coming up tomorrow, followed by a Venus transit, which is really extraordinary as well. Can you share with us a little from your astrological knowledge how sure. what does that mean for humanity?
Well, the Venus transit is sort of like it's like a new moon and an eclipse, in the sense that Venus is exactly in between the Earth and the Sun. I like to teach people astrology by using keywords. So Venus is love and attraction, and the Sun is your purpose, and the Earth is practical matters. So it's not necessarily that love gets between your purpose and practical matters, but what's happening is the Sun actually amplifies the energy of love. So when Venus is on this side of the Sun and closer to the Earth, so I think it's a time for infusing practical matters with love. And you know, that sounds, you know, the way people make fun of crystals and they make fun of the New Age. Well, guess what? It is a New Age, and everything is powered by crystals, from lasers to your watch to your LCD screen. So they can make fun as much as they want about me telling you to power your purpose with love. But watch what happens. You'll make more money. If that makes them happy, then they get it all of a sudden. You'll be healthier. Mm-hmm. So it's with a Venus transit, it's calling to the people who are willing to infuse their life with love and to blend that with whatever they're doing, and that could be working for the DMV or anything. If you put a little more love into what you're doing, it'll be like hitting a basketball when it's bouncing up. It goes a lot higher. And the other key word, the moon, is your emotions. So when you have a solar eclipse, you have your emotions coming between your purpose and practical matters. So eclipses are times to watch your emotions. That's an important thing. And knowing where the eclipse falls in your chart, you know, because astrologers talk about houses. The easiest way to remember it is to think of a pizza, a round pizza pie, with 12 slices. Each one of the slices is a different slice of life. So where in that, and you can get charts for free on the internet anywhere. So it's really easy to do. So see where the eclipse falls in your chart, and that's the area you got to watch your emotions. So the same thing with a new moon. It's like your emotions are there, but you're not seeing them, because the symbolism of the new moon is a dark moon. It's a great time to begin stuff, but maybe that's because your emotions are going to get out of the way. I love the keywords of the different planets, because it helps you understand what's going on in your life. And the Sun being your purpose, so if your purpose, if you're an Aries, then you have an Aries purpose. If you're an Aquarius, you have an Aquarius purpose. What's your Sun sign?
Mine, I'm Virgo.
So Virgos are interested in analyzing things, being of use to people, service, and they can see the real details of things. I love astrology. It's a lot of fun.
I really appreciate it, too, and it is a lot of fun, and it's practical as well. We Virgos like practical.
It has to be practical. I mean, I have Saturn in Virgo, which means I don't think rationally about practical things. And everyone has Saturn in their chart. Wherever you have Saturn, it's an area where you don't necessarily think rationally. If you have Saturn in Cancer, the sign Cancer in astrology has to do with nurturing and the mother. And so people with Saturn in Cancer always feel like they're not getting enough support. So to know that you're dealing with someone who has that feeling is an important thing. So you don't judge them for feeling like that. And also, it'll prevent you from taking it personally. This is one of the interesting things about astrology or any of the metaphysical subjects. It's all about realizing how similar we are and how different we are. And it gives you... See, I once taught a class to fifth grade about astrology, and you could hear a pin drop. No one acted out. No one said a word other than questions that made sense, because they want to know. They want to know how you gain personal power, and that's what it's all about.
Well, do you offer readings? Tell us where to find you. Tell us a little bit about your websites and the services you offer. Do you do astrological charts and things for people as well?
I do. I mean, most of my work is with corporations, believe it or not, because I'm very expensive. But you can go to my website. I do like one question and three questions. I have that too. And it's Monte, M-O-N-T-E with an E, Monte Farber, F-A-R-B-E-R.com. And everything about that I do is there. Or if you want to know more about the books, that's theenchantedworld.com. And if you want to see amazing art and fashion and jewelry, my wife, Amy Zerner, Zerner.com. So that's where we are. And if you want to buy our books, we have our, talk about manifesting. One time we said, you know, we need to have our own shelves at Barnes & Noble. Well, guess what? Now we have our own shelves at Barnes & Noble in the spirituality section. If you'll look at the top two or three shelves, that's usually Amy and my stuff. And that was all quantum affirmations. Wasn't easy either. But it's a lot easier than most people's lives. That's one of the things that I'm so excited about with quantum affirmations is I've heard from so many people how it's making their life better and easier. And, you know, I get a little sad. I wish everyone knew about it, and I wish everyone was doing it, because there's enough for everyone. You know, it's not a zero-sum game.
Absolutely. And, okay, so here's one for you.
Okay.
Are you ready? All right. Now, going from quantum to practical, how do you see quantum affirmations working as our debtor economy is crumbling in the light of the new emerging? We are at a precipice, right? So how do you see the quantum affirmations applicable in an economic environment that's dissolving on one hand and the new one just a babe. I mean, some of us can see it, but it's a babe, and it's definitely not going to be obvious for some time, but it's there. But the big message now is the old debtor economy that does say some people have and a lot of people don't have, all right?
Yeah.
Okay, that's the debtor economy. You know, you get to have 500 million, and 500 million get to have one to share. Okay, that is the debtor economy that's dissolving. So how does the quantum affirmations work in this environment that those, you know, when money, quote, the old debtor economy was more in a flow, even just 5 years, 10 years ago, was different, right, than it would be now? Because we definitely are in the rocky boat.
Well, definitely. I mean, now it's going to start sounding a bit like science fiction. But once again, this comes back to quantum physics, that implied in this moment are many probable futures. One of those probable futures has you and your listeners individually in a future where they're okay. I'm not going to say that they're going to be, you know, have a castle and a moat and a jet plane, but one of those probable futures has them in a place where they're okay financially. And keep in mind, miracles do happen, and there are people working to keep the world economy from going down the tubes. So there is a probable future out there that they get it together. And this is what sounds like science fiction. You want to get into that future, because there's another future where, you know, a loaf of bread will cost $1,000. So you want to avoid that future. And quantum affirmations is all about getting yourself to the future that you want to get to. And, of course, as someone, it sounds like you read the news, too. I read the news obsessively every night. I definitely know that the dangers exist. But the dangers exist every time you walk out of your house. And whether you live in the city or whether you live in the country, there's always stuff. I mean, you can have a tractor fall on you, which actually someone I know had that happen. Out here in the country.
Ouch.
You know what I mean? It's like there's always danger, and every time you get in your car, every time you walk, I mean, even on bicycles, you can get hurt. But at the same time, you cannot get hurt, and you want to get into the future where you're not going to get hurt, where your bills are going to be paid. This is not too much to ask from the universe. and quantum affirmation. And in every economy, even in the Depression, some people were okay, and you want to be one of them. So that's what quantum affirmations is all about. And this is not wishful thinking. This is science. Science says that there are probable futures, and you can go to the one that you want to, not necessarily is it guaranteed, but why not increase your odds? And that's what quantum affirmations is about. I mean, our books are selling more than ever. So it's hard to, and everyone's saying, oh, books are going down the tubes. And you know, there's always exceptions, you know?
Well, there is, and I think that was a really good response, because the probable outcomes, I can totally concur with that. And so I think that one part of it that is also coming into my consciousness and the probable outcome that I am actively participating in the co-creation of is that all have all. So that will be the probable outcome that I am going for. I personally have no room in my probable outcome for walking over one more homeless person ever.
Yeah.
You know, a hungry people exist on planet Earth is just completely incomprehensible to me. This is
especially
an abundant planet.
They throw away food all the time. You know, if food gets thrown away, it's like, why are they throwing food away when there's people that are hungry?
Absolutely. And sleeping in these guys sleeping in doorways of vacant buildings. Now that one really gets me. It's like,
well, I was homeless when I was 17 and I got thrown out of my house. But of course I was young. I was male. It was a different time. It was 1967, but I was homeless for quite some time. And I remember sleeping on skids. You know, they talk about being on the skids, sleeping on pallets, moving pallets and of course, I didn't have it as hard as some, and especially as a child or a woman who's homeless. But I know what you can do, and this is also where quantum affirmations comes from. You know, I started off chanting Namo Yo. What is it? Namo Yo Renge Kyo. Someone told me that.
Uh-huh.
I chanted it for about 4 hours, and then I said, "You know what? I'm going to go get a job." And, you know, because I had been a musician and I wanted to play my music and I'm going to do this. And finally, I guess it cleared my mind. So I guess a lot of the work we're doing is helping people to clear their minds and get on with the business of life. And of course it's hard. And of course there's hard times ahead for everyone. I do not deceive myself. I know what's coming. But I think I want to just do all I can to move into as best a possible future as I can. That's all. Mm.
I can appreciate that very much. And that's all we all can do, right?
Yeah, that's right. That literally is all we can do. Because what's a life? I mean, all these people, like you were saying, the $500 million people, and I read for them because, as I said, I'm expensive. And I know what the difference between them and me is the size of the yard sale they're going to have when they die.
Yeah. Or the huge burden they're going to leave for the ones that they leave behind.
It's
That's
true.
Another and, side of and, the same coin because, hey, folks, you know, when you're done, what you leave behind in your legacy is where, you know, your kids and loved ones pick up after you. So,
yeah, I know a lot of great people with a lot of money who are doing wonderful things and help and fund all kinds of things and don't want to be known for it. You know, they do everything anonymously and they help people get new eyes. And I mean, I know people that do wonderful things. And of course, there's plenty of people working full time to give having money a bad name. They're just like there are attorneys and psychics. You know, there's plenty of people giving it a bad name. But there's wealth that's being used properly. And that's why I like to share whatever I learn with the world through my books, because I feel that's the best way to keep healthy and lucky and in love and keep me and Amy and our cat Zane alive as long as possible. Yeah, I guess I believe in magic. I guess that's what it comes down to.
I do too. I think that magic is normal, actually. I think that this is one thing that I find in my most basic definition of spirituality is just simply the consciousness that includes all that is. And all that is everything, seen and unseen and spirit. And, you know, to me, that spirituality is just knowing that I'm part of a magnificent mystery and I get to know my little part, and that's enough.
Isn't that cool? I mean, and here we are. I feel so excited about our conversation because we're obviously on the same wavelength. And you have a radio show, so you have listeners who are on the same wavelength. That kind of wavelength broadcast affects the world. It does change the world because, you know, there was this great psychic, Edgar Cayce, who made predictions that Earth changes were going to come in 1968 and 69. They didn't come. What came was the revolution in consciousness in the 60s. And I think consciousness does change the world. Anyone who might be familiar with the Seth material, which is channeled information, talked about how group consciousness affects the weather. So in terms of global conditions, perhaps the increase in consciousness and understanding, and if we can get the word out there to more and more people, maybe it will affect global warming and all kinds of weather-related information. Once again, quantum physics has shown that matter is aware of consciousness, that what we call inanimate matter is aware when it's being observed. To me, that's a revolution. It should be on the front page of every newspaper every day. You know,
Absolutely. And when people start asking those questions, it will be, because it's really a reflection of us. That's something that I come home to often. It's so much more clarity comes every day about the fact that, our world has a lot of rough edges, and so we can do something about that. And as long as we need this reflection, then it will be here for us. Yeah. And the way our consciousness is manipulated and all of that is directly related to our own immaturity, inability, unwillingness, whatever word is appropriate for you, irresponsibility, and then they all apply to some time, to someone, to all of us, that we aren't taking responsibility for our own participation in the co-creation. We think we're doing the good thing. We're going to the food pantry and we're passing out food, but we're not taking care of our mind. We're not minding the chatter that says, these people are so poor, and all the negative train of thought that keeps them there. We don't realize the power of every single thought, and that being a happy, joyful person is what will create the happy, joyful world. There's nothing else that's going to do it.
You're right.
I think
you're absolutely right. I mean, where do I buy your book?
It's coming. I am a writer too, and I have been working on a lot of really interesting stuff, putting together. I'm having a ball, actually. I'm in the joy phase big time right now. Like yourself, I can totally relate to the challenging story, you know, difficult beginning, unique path. You know, I had 27 years with my beloved mom, who was just my gift on so many levels, but also my initiation. And so she we're getting low on time here, but I'm curious how you could do with communication. The people leave their bodies, but their soul is well intact, and you're, I'm sure, familiar with that. And the communication between us never stopped. So I found myself, 3 years ago when she left, because I was prepared for all those years for that exact moment. She was really sneaky. She was so sneaky, that girl. Oh, God. So I've been integrating all of that because I found myself in this really interesting place at this really fascinating time on planet Earth. And my big lesson now is joy and sharing this gift of this show and the gift of these great people that come along my way as yourself. And I'm just getting started. And my books, they're coming. They are definitely coming.
Well, you definitely know everything that I'm talking about. So, I mean, I'm so excited to be talking with someone who doesn't just ask the good questions, but is living the good. You're living it. You're not. You know, you're living the blues. You're not just singing the blues.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And so you're walking the talk, because You see, here we are. You're having a good time. I'm having a good time. Sometimes I feel guilty about it. It's like I have this wonderful life and there's so much suffering in the world. But there's always been so much suffering in the world. And yet some people have been enjoying it. I opened up this book by the Dalai Lama and the first line said, "The purpose of life is to be happy." And I thought to myself, you know what? That's what I've always said. And you know, I really love that the Dalai Lama thinks that too, because what else are we here for? But yet some people think that that's not the purpose of life. I think the purpose of life is to be happy and to help other people be happy, because some people have a much worse start than I did. So that's what I'm trying to do with Quantum Affirmations and all my books, and I'm sure your books are going to help people the same way.
Yeah, I am. Yeah, we're very aligned. I share that, and to find your joy and to share it. And I've changed a lot in as I've learned to love myself and really, really unconditionally love myself, warts and all, as you would say, right?
Yeah, that's and the way to do it.
And now I look out and I see suffering, but I don't see sick people. My whole view has radically shifted.
Mother you don't want to feel sorry for people because that insults them.
And it doesn't allow them the dignity they deserve to fully honor their soul path.
I find it's really
a disservice to look at somebody as if they're sick or less than a divine, incredible being, because everybody is, even the person you walk over in the street. And I had this amazing experience when I was just a kid, 16, and I was in San Francisco and encountered a drunk. I was sitting on the harbor. And I don't know how I encountered him, or, you know, I just found myself sitting next to him. And there was something in the light of his eyes. He had these like gray, blue, drunk, beautiful, shining eyes. I mean, his eyes were like little moons. They were so bright. And for all his drunkenness, he was really happy. And that really profoundly affected me as a teenager. I thought, wow, you know, there's nothing wrong with him. You know, and society would walk by him and call him all these names. And from that moment on, I really had a soft place and kind of caught myself when I wanted to do that and realized and evolved continuing. You know, now I can articulate better, and I can't say I was perfect at that all along, but, you know, that's where we're at now. It's like, no, there's no sick people here. We all have, we're one family, right?
Yeah, exactly. And the divine is speaking to us at all times and through all people. And you got to listen. And to look at a person and see them and think that they're just a drunk. First of all, they're a person with a life story that would probably fascinate you for hours. Mm. And second of all, it's the divine. That's what namaste is. The divine in me acknowledges the divine in you. That's the meaning of it. So there's no, like you said, there's no sick people here. It's just the divine knowing itself.
Hmm. Well, this has been really fantastic. We're getting close on time. And so I want to put the last, I guess, 5 minutes or so here and offer you the time to offer final thoughts or your website again or messages along the line of closure, because we're getting close here.
Well, I feel like we've really done wonderful things. I mean, you've inspired me, and I hope I've inspired you and your audience. If you're interested in learning more about me, once again, it's MontyFarber.com or TheEnchantedWorld.com. I have a Twitter feed, which is Ask Monty, and then there's also Amy Zerner. My wife is the most amazing person I know, it's just at Amy Zerner or AmyZerner.com. She, you know, her Twitter thing, and she has a Facebook, and we have the Enchanted World Facebook page. I could spend a whole hour talking about all our, you know, just naming the titles of everything today. But, you know, the whole thing with social media and doing publicity for books, that's not why I'm doing it. I mean, I want to get it out there, but I want to help people. And I'm right now I find myself in the beautiful position of having finally written a book that isn't metaphysical, and so there's less pushback. And Quantum Affirmations, if you're ready to change your life, I feel like this is the book to take on the desert island with you. I know it sounds like I'm tooting my own horn, but I feel like it just came through me. And I'm looking forward to your book, too, because you really say great stuff, and I love the way you articulate stuff. And by the way, 28 is 27 or 28 is the Saturn return in astrology, so that is a time when we go from being a youth to an adult.
Yes, and it just gets better from there. It does. I'll be 49 in September, and I'm telling you, it just gets better. It just gets better.
You sound like you're like in your 20s.
Well, it's just me. That I know I get told that, and people tell me I look that. And actually, you know, because I you know, was thinking about that this morning, that really I think it's just becoming more loving toward myself and being truthful. My friend was saying, "Well, Jamil, you know, your face has changed and all this stuff." And I really am much more happy than I've ever been. And then I was thinking, well, you know, I think it's just because I'm honest with myself. You know, yeah. I think you really hit it on that. I'm just honest with myself. When I feel okay, I feel okay. When I feel like crap, I feel like crap.
Yeah,
I feel like crap. I mean, today I'm in a good mood because I was out real late having a great time with these amazing people. You know, hey, that was, yeah. But, you know, a couple of days ago, I've had some, you know, some funky days.
Oh, my God.
Days
well, with the way, you know? The way the world is, I don't blame anybody for being, you know, if people say, oh, I'm depressed. Of course you're depressed. I mean, no matter what you do, life can be depressing. I think it's what you say. It's being true to yourself and being friends with yourself and not lying to yourself, and then your world is going to change in big ways right there. And you don't need a book for that.
Mm-mm. But thank people like, thank goodness for people like you who wrote books, you know, because I've read your books. I've read so many books, and those books have helped me so much. And you never know what I've learned as I've evolved is that you never know that when you're reading these books and you're watching these videos and, you know, listening to music, I'm a huge music. Music must be part of everything to me. And you never know when those little seeds are gonna to take root. You just don't know that. And if it wasn't for every single person, whoever wrote a book that I read that gave me a little insight, I wouldn't be the person I am. You know,
right.
It really matters.
It does matter. And I think it was, I think it might have been unfortunately, well, not unfortunately, but Eldridge Cleaver, someone who once said, you're either part of the solution or you're part of the problem.
Mm.
So I've always wanted to be part of the solution.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you certainly made a niche for yourself. You didn't waste any time. I mean, you got right to it and attracted a partner that you could share the joy and the travail and you know, mutually inspire each other. That's
yeah.
a beautiful gift. You know,
no,
just your example
lucky.
Of that.
Mm. I think it was also because of her mother, who sounds like your mother, you know, a wonderful person. It was actually when she passed in 1996 is when I started doing psychic work because I missed her so much. I wanted to get in touch with her. So, yeah, I mean, I'd studied it my whole life, but I never thought of myself as psychic. I knew I was intuitive, and I knew astrology and tarot, but since 1996, I've always done the psychic stuff because I had this great launching pad with Amy's mother. So I know the power of having an amazingly strong woman and an inspirational woman. So I really hear you when you're talking about your mom.
Absolutely, and you're speaking to something, too, that is a theory I have that everybody who crosses over when they leave their body, a lot of people I find really close in the ether are specifically hanging back to help us in exactly that way.
Yes, I agree. You know, the Buddhists have a concept of a bodhisattva, a bodhisattva, which is someone who keeps incarnating to help people, even though they could go to the next dimensions. So I like to think of myself as a no bodhisattva. So I'm not necessarily famous, but I'm out there doing what I can. I mean, Amy's mother was the perfect example of that. She was a wonderful illustrator, and when she passed, so many people came to her service because they loved her, and she had helped so many people. So it's not about fame. It's not about wealth. It's about being a nobody sattva.
I like that.
Yeah.
Well, bless your beautiful, beautiful heart, and I really wish you all the best, the greatest success, and what you're doing, and it's really nice to share the road. We're getting there one heart at a time. You know, I have great faith. And sometimes people say, oh, well, you know, the human race, blah, blah, blah. And I say, yeah, but we only need 5%. You know, we don't need everybody. And and the rest will benefit. So it's quite attainable. Our goal is quite reasonable and well within reach. So I have no doubt. I really don't at this point.
Thank you. You know, one of the first things I got from Amy's mother when she was on the other side, and we asked her, what's it like over there? What makes it so different? She says, where I am now, there is no doubt.
Hmm. Interesting.
Uh-huh.
Very interesting. Are you all still in touch?
Every day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When I do my psychic work, I lay in the bed that she used to sleep in, and I like to think that she's here helping me.
Well, she's here right now, of course.
Of course, yeah.
Mm. Yep. So is my mom, and you know, that's really interesting. It looks like we are being granted time to do whatever we want. So we, my guy's back. I want to be fully respectful of your time, but we don't have any show after, so we can go for a little bit longer if you want. But I want to be respectful of your
time. Whatever, I'm having a blast.
Okay, well, me too. And this is getting really interesting because I really want to go here with somebody that can go there with the conversation of the communication with an eternal soul. I really want a new dictionary on this. You know, this dead people stuff really doesn't work for me. You know, the eternal soul of your mother-in-law and the continuing communion. I would really like to hear more about that.
Sure. Okay, you mean like, and then it could be available on the web or something?
What do you mean?
You mean because we're going to go over an hour or the time you have for the show?
Well, we're still on live now.
Oh,
and
cool.
Yeah, there's no show after us. So my Doug in the back just said, "Oh, no problem. We can just talk."
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That's so unusual. Well, you know, I like to think scientifically. I know I make people laugh when I talk about this. Is when I talk about being a psychic. I read for a man who's one of the really good, wealthy people who has a gigantic investment bank, and he's a very spiritual, wonderful person, and helps the world. And I told him, I said, I'm a classically trained psychic, and I thought he was going to choke on the glass of water he was drinking, but I am. I studied astrology and tarot, and then I never did psychic work. And in the mystery schools, you did not do psychic work. In alchemy, there's an expression, you don't make gold unless you have it already. And what that means is you got to perfect yourself before you go doing psychic work, because you're messing with some powerful stuff. And if you don't do it with love, or if you do it with ego, it's going to not work out in your life. It's going to come back and bite you on the butt. So as a classically trained psychic, I know that there is something out there. I'm not egotistical enough to say that I know how it works. But if you want to think scientifically about psychic phenomena, think about the visible spectrum of light. We can see certain frequencies. We can't see other frequencies. It doesn't mean they're not there. And that's, I think, when we're alive, we're in one frequency, and when we're dead, we're in another frequency, and we can't see them, but somehow they communicate with me. I have had two or three experiences, because I hold it at arm's length, because I always know that I can be wrong, but I've had two or three experiences where I have racked my brain, and I cannot think of any other explanation other than a deceased person spoke to me and told me information that was verified. And I don't blame anybody for thinking, well, that's just what he thinks. But from my point of view, I'd be crazy if I told you that there is not life after death, because I've seen it. I've seen its example, and I've tried to disprove it myself, and I can't. I mean, if we have enough time, I can even tell you the experience.
Go ahead, share with us the experience. I think that the stories, the real life stories, speak volumes to people.
Sure. Well, I had done a tarot and astrology, and I'd been a psychic for quite some time. A friend of mine, who's a famous author named Rona Jaffe, died, And she died in an unexpected way. I didn't know she was sick. And we hadn't seen her since the summer. It was December around Christmas. And someone called us to tell us that she was gone. And I was stunned. And my wife and I were both stunned. We got off the phone, and Amy, and you know, because I have this gift, she said, "Does Rona have a message for us?" And usually I get kind of upset about things like that because, you know, here I am, I'm a human being, I'm going through being upset about losing my friend. But in this time, I heard, "Tell Cousin Betsy I'm not angry at her." And I thought, well, I know who Cousin Betsy is, but Cousin Betsy is like her daughter. And, I mean, I heard it as the way I'm hearing you.
Mm.
So, I went to the funeral, totally devastated like everybody else, because even though you know that there's life after death, it doesn't stop you from missing people. And who shows up last is Cousin Betsy, and she looks like she's haunted. And, you know, when people pass on, the sentences like, "Tell Cousin Betsy I'm not mad at her," that's the important stuff. It's not like the gold is hidden under the floorboards. It's you want to make sure things are right with people. And I went up to Cousin Betsy and I said, "You know, you're going to think I'm crazy, but here's what I heard." And Cousin Betsy knows that I'm a psychic. She said, "You didn't know?" I said, "No." She said, "We had a huge fight about the way I'm raising my daughter."
Oh, wow.
And I just found out from the attorneys that Rona has endowed my daughter's tuition, college, and you know, I've been feeling terrible. And then she felt better. And this was to me, and I thought to myself, I didn't know she was dead. I didn't know they'd had a fight. I didn't know anything. And I heard it as clearly as I hear anything, you know, "Tell her I'm not mad at her." And that's the kind of thing someone says on their deathbed.
Hmm.
So to me, that is maybe the amazing Randy, who I've actually met, might find a way to say that I'm lying to myself, and I'm open to seeing that if that's possible. But from my point of view, that was Rona talking to me from the dead, telling me about something that meant something to her.
Mm.
And that's just one example. There's others.
Mm.
I've actually had a tree talk to me once. That was before I was a really evolved person. That was one of my first psychic experiences. I was a musician. It was 1981. I was, you know, because I'm 62. So it was 1981, and I was still a musician. I was still, you know, smoking marijuana or whatever. And I was a pseudo hippie, and I said, I was driving around the Hamptons, and I pulled up behind one of these tree movers that has a huge, gigantic tree in it.
Mm.
And I'm not talking about, you know, a 12-footer. I'm talking about a full-grown, mature oak tree or something like that. And I went into my hippy-dippy, "Oh, tree, I'm so sorry that you're picked up like that and that you're being transported. I hope you'll be okay, and I'm sending you good vibes." And once again, I heard as clear as day, "I'm fine, it's you I'm worried about." And I thought, whoa! You know, shortly thereafter, I gave up smoking marijuana. I mean, I was just like, because, you know, when it happens to you, you can't, well, you can deny it if you want to go further into escapism and drugs and drinking. And, but I was like, what the hell just happened? And the thing was, I realized that the tree was right. You know, it's like, so it was sort of warning me, you know, it's like, you know, stop lying to yourself and stop thinking that you're the spiritual person when you're you're no Native American doing sacraments, you're some stoned out musician. So once again, it's all part of peeling the onion of life. And you know what happens when you peel an onion, you cry a lot. So those are two of my funny stories. I'm putting it all in this book, The Tao of Brooklyn, because friends of mine who have a publishing company, they want stories of how I got to be who I am. Mm. So those are two of the funny stories.
I think that's great. I really appreciate you sharing that. And the stories really work, you know. That's how we learn from each other, sharing our stories. It's such an easy, I find that much more accessible sometimes than all the dry data. You know, we go, okay,
yeah.
Dry data, that's great. But then when you know, hear these little stories, then I can sort of fit myself into it a little bit, you know.
I know. Well, because we're all the same in so many ways, you know. I think everyone means, I might be crazy, but I do think that at some level everyone means well, even the crazy people.
I agree. They're all doing their job. Even Hitler was doing his job, you know.
I know, that's a hard one, but I know what you mean.
Yeah, we're all in this together, and we're all choosing this path, and we're, you know, there are no victims, you know.
Right, and then there was like the classic, it's like a two-year-old, stop me if you can. You know, he should have been stopped, but they didn't stop him. So there's all kinds of, and once again, that's a probable reality. And there was another reality that they could have gone down, and perhaps there was. Yeah, I think that the multiple reality concept of quantum physics is what explains spontaneous healing. It's all of a sudden you plug into because I forgot to mention this. I can't believe I did. Quantum physicists say there's no reason that time can't flow backwards, so you can change the past. To me, that's an explanation for spontaneous healing, that you link up with a different past. And so you're not coming from the same place that made you sick. Because there are miraculous spontaneous healings. Whether they know how they happen or not, this is just a possible explanation for it. But since quantum physics has been proven so much, I think that this is an avenue that should be explored, that perhaps they've hooked up with a different past.
I fully agree with that, and I find that really fascinating. Another person's work who I really appreciate, her name is Lynn Woodland, and she wrote a book called The Miracle Experiment, and she is very similar in her approach with quantum physics, and she specifically works with the time collapse of quantum physics and the past, present, and future all being one. And in that time collapse, allowing you to go back and forth and recreate the future and the now, because it's really, there isn't really a past and the future. You know, these are all concepts that we're, you know, playing with in our third, fourth dimension reality. But in truth, in the big truth, right, there's all simultaneous. So there's no reason.
True.
Yeah, there's no reason you can't affect that change because you're already there.
I know. The trick with stuff like that is to realize that, yes, it's true, and A, it's true, and B, you don't necessarily have to really understand it, but as long as you know it's true, and to sort of hold on, because that's quite the roller coaster ride when you really get into the time collapse. And I always like to tell people, especially when I'm talking to a plumber or someone who knows electricity, think of resistance. Resistance in electricity or plumbing is the resistance to the water or electrons flowing through matter, because there's the friction of the pipe or the friction of the copper wire or whatever. So think of time as the resistance to everything happening at the same time. You know, so time is actually the resistance to the time collapse. And these are the avenues I'm hoping that quantum physicists are exploring, because these are the things that are going to result in time travel.
Mm-hmm. Well, and in some circles, and I find a great deal of truth in the research that I've done, it already exists, which brings us into another realm of our probable and current realities, which there are realities that are sold to us and the realities that are not. There's a great deal of secrecy on this planet. The powers that used to be are now being revealed, but these technologies actually, I personally feel very clear, have existed for some time.
Oh, yeah.
And they've been used against humanity. They've not been used to fortify the good of all, which doesn't just include humans. It includes the good of all, includes all species. You know, our homo-centered reality, that's part of the consciousness shift in my probable outcome, that we're not just, you know, okay, I'm a human and anything that isn't a human, I'm going to eat. You know, it's like, it's not about the human thing. It's about our interconnection with all life. So,
especially when so many animals have been shown to be so smart.
Ugh.
And just as smart as us. I was just reading about a horse that is like a genius. It knows numbers. It knows people's names. I mean, just, and of course there's, you know, the gorilla Coco, and there's other animals that can do sign language, and they have emotions.
Oh, so, big time emotions.
Yeah. This is what sometimes gets to me, and I think it's good to talk about what gets to me, because I don't want to sound like, oh, yeah, I wrote quantum affirmations, so I know everything and everything's going great. But things get to me. The plight of animals, I can't even go to a zoo for it. And then there's just so much suffering in the world, you know, and Buddhism talks about suffering. But when you know people, and like what you say about going to help the homeless or people who are starving, when you get out in the world with people, and you realize how rough things are. You know, you want to do something, but you can either help individuals, which is a good thing, but you can also try and help people not get into that situation. Because, you know, you were saying before about how rough the economy is. I don't want to see more homeless people. I want people to get into the probable future where they keep the house. There's so many foreclosures and so many, you know, underwater mortgages, and quantum affirmations, as you can actually get into the quantum future, and music helps. I'm not because you're saying about music.
Oh, music, yeah,
music's important. There's so much magic, and yet you don't see it. It's reflected in your show. And it's reflected in our works and our books and your book that's going to come. But it's not on television. It's not on video games.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a problem. And I think, I actually am hopeful. The other day on Dr. Phil, they had psychics.
Mm.
And I'm thinking to myself, I wonder if this is Oprah testing the waters to have that kind of stuff on the OWN network. Because it's not doing so great, people want what we're talking about. What you and I are talking about today, just talking about it, not necessarily, they may not believe it, but they want to listen to it. I think eventually they're going to get it. And I had a friend, one of the people I read for used to be the head of a big television network, and he says, New Age is a broad market masquerading as a niche market. So I'm hoping that someone like Oprah or someone like her will start to put this into the mainstream, because the conversation that we've been having is important. People need to hear this, because I think a lot of people think it in their heads, but they think they're the only ones who think it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I absolutely agree.
Yeah,
and
they're afraid to say anything about it.
Absolutely. I went through that last night, you know, because I'm a big Universe fan, and these amazing kids, you know, they wanted to talk. They wanted to talk Universe, you know, and just having the door open and, of course, get me going about the Universe. Oh, I'm there, you know, and they were just really so happy for exactly what you said, that there was a doorway open, that they could just talk, that they could just listen, and that they could know that they weren't so alone. There's this isolation that happens when we don't talk and when we don't share our thoughts and our opinions. And it's amazing to me. I've, you know, sort of quipped, wow, for this country that calls itself free and they say, oh, freedom of speech. They don't say too much from their heart here, you know?
Yeah. Well, people are afraid. People are afraid that they're going to be made fun of. And the thing that saved my life growing up was I didn't care what anyone thought about what I said or did or the way I dressed. I really, really didn't. It's not that I thought of myself as tough. Now I think of myself as tough. When I was growing up, I was the least tough person in my neighborhood. But I didn't care. I said, this is them, this is me, and I don't care. Because if I listen to them, I'm going to end up crazy like them, and I'm not going to do that. And it's all selfish and self-preservation, and it also helps once again that I'm a guy and that I'm big and I can handle myself and all this other stuff. But I'll say anything to anyone, and I'll talk about what I think is true. And so many people will then come up to me if I give a workshop or a talk or something. At the end, they'll say, well, you know, my grandmother came to me when she died, and, you know, she was dead, and I saw her at the foot of my bed, but I've never told anyone this. I cannot tell you how many times people tell me, I've never told anyone this, but this happened to me. Because they're afraid. They don't want people to think, you know, they saw a flying saucer.
Yeah.
And so what if they did see a flying saucer? I mean, if you saw it, say it, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I saw something when I was a kid. I was in the Civil Air Patrol with my friend who then became a pilot, you know, in the Navy, jet pilot, and he'll admit to seeing this. And we were once, you know, we were trained to look at contrails and tell what kind of a jet it was. And it's 1966, and we're walking down the street in Brooklyn, and we look up and we see a contrail, and we're like, oh, that's a B-52. No, that's a this and that. All of a sudden, it makes a right turn. And we're like, nothing can make a right turn at that kind of altitude. Nothing. There's no thing that can make a 90-degree corner. And we both started running, you know, down Church Avenue in Brooklyn because we didn't know what that... We were in uniform, you know, the little 16-year-old kids. We didn't know what to do. You know, and so, you know, someone says, you know, I saw something once, but I can't say anything because I'm afraid. I feel like I'm talking to people in a zoo.
I understand.
Yeah, so and especially, I mean, you do this every week you do your show, or you do it?
Every fortnight, yeah.
You're talking the truth.
Yeah, I don't have anything else to say.
That's good, and that's what we need. If people were this truthful and talking about what's real, then there wouldn't be the world on the verge of economic collapse the way it apparently is at this moment.
I totally agree, and it's been really kind of fun. I'm like yourself again in that, you know, I can't say that when I was a kid I didn't care so much, but I didn't seem to have the control to stop my mouth. You know, I just sometimes tease and go, well, I was just one of those kids that was born with her hand up. You know, I just always have something to say. And all my Virgo, whatever, you can call whatever. But I just had to learn over time not to care about what people thought of me. I can't say I felt that as a kid by a long shot.
Well, it's different. It sounds like you had a great mother, though. When you were home, you could say what you wanted.
Well, when I was adopted at 18, and my first years in my biological, part biology, not part biology, it was a really messed up situation in terms of there was, but actually, you know, it's one of these things that I can reflect on now and fully appreciate the gifts that it offered. At the time, it was your typical dysfunctional, you know, American scenario, lots and lots of violence, lots of madness, no communication whatsoever. Nobody talked to anybody, you know, yelling. It was all yelling and hitting and all these things. So that was
a poor thing.
Well, it was, but now I can look back and go, what that taught me, one of the major, probably the most important thing that taught me was a sovereignty of my own voice. Because while I had these difficult situations in my home environment, I had a very strong inner life. And I had very vivid dreams, and I had very vivid visitations from my friends in high places. That's what I call them. I called them that then. I call them that now. And at 4 years old, I was having very clear dreams that made a lot of sense to me at 4 years old. And I was able to recognize how my dreams were manifesting. And I was able to realize that they were warning me. So I began this inner dialogue at a very young age in this environment that fostered that need to have that kind of strength in me. And that was the greatest gift. But now, even more than that, so I hooked up with Mom at 18 and began my spiritual initiation of sorts, if you will, that's kind of what it would be called now in common terms.
Sure.
But basically, it was my continuing evolution of my inner life without interruption, because my mother was a near-death experiencer. She lived you know, mostly on the other side, basically. And, you know, intuition sat at the table at our house always. And with her, you think I'm real? I never met anybody more real than my mother. I mean, she, there was no shit. That was the thing. She had physically many challenges. She was legally blind. She was the runt of a litter of a twin. She had, her body was always in pain. I don't know how she suffered. I mean, she was the walking sufferer. That was her card. She was the martyr. She was, I couldn't believe how she dealt with the pain that she was in. And it made me real humble. I was like, whoa, I really think before I complain, let me tell you. Because how could I watch? I couldn't. I was like, wow, my God, this woman, she's, you know, doesn't have C's. But what she could see with that third eye of her, I used to tease her. I was like, you don't need your eyes, Mom, because that third eye...
Yeah.
You can't lie to her. You could not lie to her. So we just didn't go there. We just didn't go there. We had to go to truth. We had to be real. And that was the whole process that now makes me realize how all the decisions that I made in before I got here and when she left and I went through this major, major purge, major reflection, you know, I realized why I chose, and I really know I chose that point of entry, and I know why I chose it. And I can see that now, the gift of that, and how I would not have chosen any other way.
You have to write a book. I mean, this is too amazing. I feel so privileged to be hearing what you're saying. That's an important story. There's a lot of publishers in Boston, and the book fair is coming up in New York City this coming week. Maybe you should come down there and check it out, because your story really needs to be told. I mean, you're telling it now, but I still believe in books, even though people talk that, you know, people don't read. I think a lot of people read. It's just that they don't want to read nonsense.
I think the taste is definitely changing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, there's all those e-books, and, you know, some of my stuff is e-books. Quantum Affirmations is an e-book, and there's different ways for people to get information nowadays. But your story sounds incredibly unique.
Truly, it is. And everybody's story is in their voice, you know?
Yeah, and... but yours sounds a little more unique than you know, what was it, Animal Farm? Some animals are more equal than others. Your story is more unusual than others. Yeah, one of the things I talk about in Quantum Affirmations is if you come from a dysfunctional family, actually, it might not be in that book. It might be in another book. But this is what happens when you write too many.
45? I don't know why you can't keep track of all those. Come on.
Yeah,
man.
Really. but one of the things that I always maintain is if you come from a dysfunctional family, you're halfway there to being psychic, because you have to come in the morning and figure out what are they going to do today.
Mm.
What are they going to say? What are they going to do? Oh, my God. What have they done? So, coming from my own dysfunctional family, and no one hit me. I didn't come. You had a much rougher time. In the street, I got hit, because that was just, you know, the 50s in Brooklyn. Forget it. You know, everyone was fighting with everybody. But having a policeman father kept me out of a lot of getting beat up a lot of times, because in those days they respected the police, because the police were crazy. They would whack you for nothing. So.
Jeez.
Yeah, plus all the fathers had come home from, you know, World War II, and every father was as tough as nails. So it was a whole different time.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's what I'm doing in the Tao of Brooklyn. I'm trying to talk about toughness, because right now people are tough. I don't think it's fashionable to say that you're tough or that you're strong, but you got to be strong and tough to handle this kind of a onslaught of information, and so much of the information being negative, and the fact that they're not going to see the thoughts that you're talking about on your radio show reflected in when they turn on the television. You know, so you got to be strong, because they'll have a million shows about psychics and psych and Sabrina the Teenage Witch, but they won't talk about what magic really is, about how science and magic have converged.
Right. And, you know, to support people to getting to what you said way back in the beginning, which is, and supporting people to make good decisions.
Yes.
Because you can decide to take your television and put it in the trash.
Yeah,
and
for
you,
sure.
And you will be all right. You will be all right. And I've never owned a television in my life. No, I never wanted it. It bored me as a kid. It bored me as a child, okay? It really didn't do anything for me as a kid. And I was in the mountains, and, you know, I need the mountains. I need nature. I need outside, you know. Television never did it for me.
That's how Amy grew up.
Yeah?
Yeah, she grew up in northeastern Pennsylvania.
Ah, real big mountain there.
Yeah, she was... And you know, we went up there and visited some of her friends, and the kids were just sitting there watching the fireplace, and it was really cool. You know, they weren't watching television, they were watching the fireplace.
No, there's other things to do. I mean, at one point, and I've had this conversation with people for eons, but it's changed. I'm less angry now, so it's more interesting. But my late 30s, somebody, you know, was really trying to tell me, oh, but you're not going to find out what's going on in the world, Jamil. How are you going to stay informed? How do you keep up with the news and all this and that? And, you know, I was very troubled by that. And I was really thinking about it. Wow, maybe I'm out of touch. Maybe I'm not, you know, catching the news. Maybe I'm missing, you know, I really got my head all obsessed about that. And then I read the book Black Elk Speaks. And he was talking about how the indigenous people knew about the oncoming onslaught of the genocide and many things that they knew. And I read that and I said, well, you know what? They didn't have a TV.
Yeah, that's for sure.
So I said, if they can do it, I can do it.
And also, you're part of the control group because not everyone should have a television. And that's not your way, and it's not what you're here for. I mean, I don't know why, but I know a lot of people that don't have their television, and I can certainly understand it. I love Game of Thrones. That's my new thing, so I'm totally totally into a few of the different television shows. But basically, I know what you're saying. There's what is that Bruce Springsteen line? 500 channels and nothing's on? So... a lot of the but once again, why? The greatest medium in the history of the world, and it's being used to sell nonstick pans. Not that there's anything wrong with nonstick pans, but you know what I'm saying? They could be having this conversation. And when they do have this conversation, people love it. But if you talk about spirit, they're afraid that some people are going to think it's the work of the devil, or they're going to think, and it has nothing to do with the devil. It's all about science. It's all about the science of mind. It's you know, to me, tarot cards are the world's first search engine. You ask a question, as you're pulling a card, you get an answer, and you got to figure out what the answer is, because if you ever Google anything, usually what you get back is not necessarily... So, you know, you got to figure out what you're being shown and to refine your question. And that's all tarot cards are. They're a way of capturing the moment and reflecting it back to you in a visual image. And astrology is all these keywords, yes, but, you know, it's the language of the spheres. There's vibrational things. You know, the moon, obviously. I mean, I remember my father as a policeman telling me, when he was going to work, oh, God, full moon tonight, they're going to be crazy. The word lunatic comes from that, luna. Luna is moon. So
absolutely.
And plus, you know, when you tell people, well, you know, Isaac Newton discovered calculus because he was trying to figure out better ways to make more accurate ephemerises so he'd know the position of the planets for his astrology studies. And the people are like, no, that's not true, until they look it up, and apparently it is true. So... I'm not saying astrology is the be-all, but it's certainly an interesting way of looking at the world. And all this kind of stuff, which we're talking about, and about reality and helping people and homelessness, and, you know, these are the things that are going to fight homelessness, but it's not being shown on television. What's being shown is Demolition Derby and monster trucks and, you know, where's the beer and... sitcoms. So, and I'm not saying that there's anything necessarily bad with that. I think there's something bad with that being exclusively what's on television and with this being shut out, with the truth being shut out.
I agree. That makes me happy that you're watching television. And I know a number of people that I so love and respect that watch television. And I had to mature myself before I could appreciate it, because I used to be so hard to think. People who watch TV, they must be like primitive or something. I really had some heavy attitudes about 20 years ago. Really was concerned about that, because, you know, I thought it made me people monsters, you know. Yeah. But now I realize that actually intelligent, loving people watch television and they actually get value out of it. And I have a couple of coaches who sit me down, you know, and say, hey, Jamil, you'll like this show. And they educate me about things worthwhile on television. And I really appreciate it. I've come a long, long way. But a big part of what inspires me listening to you is that you are a viewer that will transform what they're putting on. Just by you, by the power of your suggestion that truth should be mainstream and your insistence on it, you being a discriminating viewer, you being one who cares about humanity, one who feels the call of all the interconnection that's going on here, you are actually creating the medium of our evolved place where it will be showing truth. I really feel that contribution you're making, that even though it's not that now, just because you're saying it can be, and we should do, because I agree, it shouldn't just be one. You want to have some, you know, demolition, great. Well, then have some love over here too. Why not balance it out, you know?
I'm so excited by what you're saying. I mean, I look forward to the day when you can turn on television and see you on there, or me on there, or Marianne Williamson on there, or, you know, someone who's passionate about what they're doing and knows what they're talking about, and I think it's going to start to happen. It's certainly happening on radio. Right now, radio is the most powerful of all in terms of putting out the truth, I think. Mm. And the internet radios and all over-the-air radios and HD radios. And Marshall McLuhan, you know, everyone knows his expression, the medium is the message. He always said radio was a hot medium, because it made you think and made you visualize. And television was a cool medium because it just said, here it is, and plopped it in front of you. So we got to make television into a hot medium again.
Yeah, or just appreciate it for what it can be. Use the cool to enhance, you know, things that need a cooler demonstration or something. You know, use it for what it is, because there is something about the way the mind and consciousness is engaged when you have to listen.
Yeah.
You know, and the television being so sensational and all the games we can play digitally now with people's mind and all the subliminal stuff and all that. So it's really an assault on your senses. When especially the garbage that they put on there, and I'm going to call it garbage because pussy in your face is garbage to me. It just is.
Yeah.
And so that is literally an assault on your senses, I think, whereas it can be more beautiful, and that's where we're going. But even with it being beautiful, even with subliminal messages being to love yourself and that you are a worthy being and that all life matters, even the fly on the wall is a sacred being, you know, if we could put that in the subliminal, that would be really cool. But even with all that, I would still find that listening, the medium of radio, I think would still be a little hotter, because it really does force you to go in yourself and be present with your process.
Definitely, without question. I mean, when radio is something you can do and do something else, but at the same time, you find yourself being pulled out of the other thing you're doing, because your mind starts making these connections because it's allowed to function. Whereas television, a lot of it is passive. I agree. A lot of it is passive, and I can understand why people do not have televisions. But there's you know, because my wife's an artist, and I like to think of myself as an artist, I appreciate when art is put into something. So this is a good time for television. There's a lot of shows on that art has been put into it. Game of Thrones being one example of it. Lately, I've been thinking about one line in it because I know a few people are going through major health crises, and there's a line in the TV show that I saw, and the Swordmaster says, says to this little girl, he's teaching how to fence, and he says, what do we say to death? And the answer is, not today. I've been thinking of that a lot lately, because that's really basically, it's simple but true.
I appreciate that a lot. And I saw this thing recently on a similar vein. It said it had a picture of a man sitting on a gurney, and like in a doctor's office, and this really ooey gooey scary hooded guy comes up, and he's carrying a big sword, and he's got it all, his arms cocked back, and he says, I'm death. And the person on the table says, that's okay, I'll just talk louder.
That's great.
It's like, yeah, there you are, but we're not afraid of you anymore. We're just gonna, like, okay, figure it out.
You're right, because yes, you see, and these are the things that they're, they'll have a million people killed on television every hour, but they won't talk about the reality of it and what comes after it, because they're afraid of offending, religious people. But then what is religion? Religion, the word, is about binding together again, binding yourself together. Religios, like ligaments. Religios, binding yourself together with your essential nature, with the divine, with the one. I think, it comes to about being friends with yourself. Because right now there's so many divisions between people, liberals, conservatives, this, that, and we're all in the same boat. So if we all got along better, I think we can make a lot more progress.
Hear, hear. You can say that again, my friend, because that is the bottom line.
Yeah. Yeah.
People
are like, that I won't talk to that person because they don't think the way I do. I'm like, what are you talking about? You got to, even if they're your enemy, you have to respect your enemy. You have to know your enemy. Don't they read Sun Tzu? Don't they read if they want to? You want to fight? Why don't you read about something from the best general ever? The first rule of warfare, according to Colonel Clausewitz, who's they study in war colleges today, this Prussian colonel, is make your base secure. So that's why, you have your show and I do my books, is to help people make themselves secure and to have a secure base so that we can function and help other people. Put your oxygen mask on first, like in the airplane.
Yeah. And we are all in this together. I have a really good feeling, and I think a big part of it is we just really need to give ourselves and each other a lot of room to grow in this loving way, that we really don't have skills to do that because we haven't yet had the loving world or for many millennia. I believe there has been a time when humanity was in a much more harmonious place than we are in now. And that's a whole other story. But I do believe that humans have an instinctual knowledge, but we don't have the 340 grounding, because we are born into this very hostile, pretty much, world that has disdain for humanity, for crying out loud.
That's true. And not everyone is as lucky as we are, where we somehow, picked ourselves up by our bootstraps. Some people are in situations that are even worse, than the violence you were talking about before, and they've never experienced what love is. They've never had anybody mirror some kind of good behavior, and those people grow up to be the people that you and I have to worry about, because those are the ones that will cause trouble. And so how do you deal with those people? I guess you got to calm them down and get them into getting into a new future where they're more happy. So that's why we're all doing what we're doing.
And being the example, because you never know how a kind word to somebody is going to make their day and even possibly change their life because of exactly what you just said. Because until we experience it, we don't know it. So every person walking, every single person has the opportunity to be a change agent for love by just simply being a loving person, by just simply taking a breath before they call out some, you know, negative mean thing because the driver cut them off. You know, every single person has that power to be that loving example that can give somebody who's never had that experience a seed to grow, you know. That's how powerful we are. I believe that.
That's very important. I mean, that's the essence of spirituality. I think I talked about Edgar Cayce before, this psychic who had predicted earth changes, but he was asked in a trance, they said to him, what's the highest thing that a soul can aspire to while on earth? And he said, the highest thing is that to make yourself and your home a place where when people leave, they're better than when they came to you.
I love that.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
I thought to myself, simple, right? But real. And that's something everyone can do, too.
Absolutely. Or aspire toward, you know, and keep loving yourself. Get back on that horse, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, someone comes to you or you know, you hang out with your friends, you just be there for them. You listen. You know, you don't criticize. You don't start trouble. You try to make, once again, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. So.
Yeah, make room in your heart. Absolutely. Wow, this is fantastic. What a lovely conversation. And now we really are at the top of the second hour.
That was awesome.
That was really a rush. That was really pleasant. I thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Anytime. This was actually my favorite radio conversation I've ever had in my whole life.
Oh my goodness.
It was real. Talk about keeping it real. It doesn't get any realer than that.
Well, bless your heart. Thank you. It couldn't be that real without you being real. Now, could it?
No, but sometimes I'm real and it doesn't translate to the other side of the conversation. But you know how that works.
Oh, I surely do.
Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you so much. We've had a lovely Alchemy of Light broadcast extending for 2 hours with Monty Farber. You can find out more about him on his website, Monty Farber, spelled MONTEFARBER. I'm Jamil Graham, your host, and I want to thank BBS, the good people in the back, for giving us the space to chat on. And likewise, Monty, thank you so much. It's been a very uplifting and peaceful, nurturing conversation. I really appreciate your taking the time. So I'm going to pass the talking stick to you to offer a final farewell to the good people and any closing notes, and then we'll sign off.
Well, I'm so excited and energized. I can't wait to tell my wife, Amy Zerner, about what we did. I just want to tell everybody, make your life a work of art and make your art a work of life. And the meaning of life is very simple. The meaning of life is to give your life meaning. And that's really all I have to say. Besides, thank you for a wonderful, wonderful conversation, Jamil.
Oh, such a pleasure. Thank you. Thank you. And I really like that. The meaning of life is to give your life meaning.
Yeah, I think about that because, of course, we're all going to pass. And when you pass, you want to think that you've done something. You know, it's a good feeling that I have. I know I'm going to go one day. And when I go, I'll lay me down with a will, as the poet used to say.
Very nice. Very nice. All right. Well, thank you. And thank you to all the listeners. Thank you for joining us, for making this worthwhile, for being a part of this awesome transmission. And until next week, or in 2 weeks, I'll be back in a fortnight. And I'll be talking myself about the new light arising on the planet. And I will see you then in a fortnight. Until then, please do take good care of yourselves and take good care of each other.